Okay, so this is joint work with Jennifer, who is here, and Boris Pitel, who is, I think, back home, and Stefan Merten. So the second part, there will be two parts of the talk. The second part is together with Stefan. So let me start with some background before I go really to the problem I'm going to talk about, which is phase transitions, or maybe we should call it threshold phenomena. Some people here have. So phase transition and combinatorial optimization problems. Okay, so we all know some of them will occur. So I will use phase transition and threshold phenomena to mean the same. Some people don't like it, but that's my notation. So the largest cluster in GNP, all of us know about it. The K-core in GNP, most of us also have heard about it. And then the random K-set formulas where you take a formula, you choose M clauses, let's say M3 clauses, uniformly at random on N variables. And then you look at these random formulas and you look at the probability that they're satisfiable. And sort of empirically, you find this and you find that it's sort of easy on this side. It gets pretty hard there. And here it's still hard, but easier than at transition. And proven, so we know some things about that rigorous. If K is 2 or 1, we can actually establish the lower picture. If K is 3 or more, we can establish this picture in the sense this goes to a jump. But the point where this happened may move around as we vary n, so we don't know that the location of the threshold has a limit as n goes to infinity. And so I already mentioned some of the questions of interest. Okay, so you may wonder whether the system has a sharp threshold. Once you have established that, you may ask, what's the scaling window? A question which people look very rarely at, but I really think one should start looking at, is the sensitivity distributions. We always say, oh, let's just assume it's uniformly at random, and it's a random graph. It's sort of uniformly at, some probability p for the edges, but otherwise pretty uniform at random. And if you think about applying it to anything in nature, there will be some probability distribution, but probably will not be uniformly at random. And a lot of the properties might quite well be not sensitive to the distribution, so it would be nice to establish that for some models. If you go to this case, that some of the algorithmic questions, are there fast algorithms below threshold up to this point? I mean, there's some progress getting nearer, and there's actually starts to be some controversy. Some people say, well, I think that algorithms will be fast up to that point, choose any point away there and I find the fast algorithms, but actually some people believe that there might be a different threshold for where fast algorithms stop to that point here. And then the complexity above the threshold, so how long does it take here to prove a formula is not satisfiable? There are some proof complexity results and there's clearly room for improvement, even though those are actually pretty good these days. Okay, so in this talk, I will shift to a slightly different problem, but it still will fall into this class of phase transition combinatorial optimization problems, the number partitioning problems. And not that these questions have been answered. Actually, some of these we have less progress yet than we have in these examples. But I think it's an example where this question, for example, is tractable. So, and it's also an example where probably if you sort of ask hardcore computer scientists, what does it mean that things are hard? And so they don't want to see a picture like that. They just want to say, well, look, you have to prove some hardness results, NP completeness, and maybe average case completeness. And once you start to talk about average case completeness, very fast they say it's very nice, but we know nothing to prove about. And again, this is a model which to some extent is nearest to models where people actually have established what's called distant P completeness. So this is probably the best shot at a model if one wanted to establish something like that, like average case completeness, for a model which is not totally sort of ad hoc, like, okay, take a Turing machine and look at the stopping time, and then sort of average case complexity is sort of essentially the definition of average case complexity. So this would be a model where... So I think a lot of these questions actually are interesting for this model. As I said, there, I mean, doesn't mean that... It actually means there's a lot of work to be done, but I think this is a promising model. Okay. So. Now. So I will talk about two variants of the integer partitioning problem. One is constrained, one is unconstrained. I will say in a moment what that means. Okay, so we start with the unconstrained one. So what do we have? We have n numbers, think of them as weights. And weights are just between 1 and 2 to the m. So n weights with m digits to describe the weight. And now you want to know, you put them on a scale, and now you want to know what's the difference from here to here. Okay, so you take the sum, so you take a partition, and then you sum over all weights on one side and over all weights on the other. You take the difference in the absolute value. You call that the discrepancy. And now the goal is to minimize that. Okay? Simple model. And now the unconstrained model is just what I gave you here. And the constrained one would be where I fix the size of the sets S1 and S2. Maybe I tell you I want exactly as many weights on the right or left. Or maybe I say I want 2 times as many as I want here. So that will be the constraint model about the talk in the second half of the talk. I'll start with this. So here, in general, S1 and S2 can have totally different size. Okay, so it could be, I mean, maybe you have a lot of weights which are 1 and one weight which is n minus 1. Okay, and then you put all weights on one side and the one weight on the other, and you have perfectly balanced to get sort of the total weight here the same as here with 1 versus n minus 1. In the constraint problem, you're not allowed to do that. I will tell you how many you are allowed to put here and how many you're allowed to put here, but then you can choose which one you put there.
So we're looking at a single partition we're trying to balance.
Right. So you try to find the partition which is optimal. Okay. And the partitions are chosen. So, and I look at the random problem. These will be chosen uniformly at random. A lot of the methods we will use in here actually would work.
What's m compared with n? No.
Comes. For the moment, nothing. Okay. So what m is compared to n will actually change what the answers to some questions are. So. Okay, so just a little bit of notation. Optimal partition is one which achieves the... it's a finite number. There's some minimum. A partition is called optimum if you achieve this minimum, or the minimum dn. And a partition is perfect if this minimum is as small as it could be. So you might want to be zero, but observe if the sum of all the weights is odd, there's no way you can balance it. So then the best you can hope is one. So we call it perfect if it's zero on the event that these are even, and we call it perfect if it's one on the event that this is odd. Okay? Now, if you look at the worst case, so forget for the moment the at random, just choose any n weights, it's NP complete. Okay? If you look at the average case problem, you may sort of ask, well, what's the probability that there's a perfect partition? Or what's the typical number of optimal partitions? Okay? Or what's the distribution of the minimal discrepancy as you choose these weights at random? All these may be questions you may want to answer. And so what would you expect? Okay. So let me... Is the model clear? Can I take this off or should I leave that? So what do we expect? Well, what we expect is the following. Just think about it a little bit. Okay, now I actually should not have asked myself what I want. Have these weights here, right? Think about a few extreme cases. Okay, so let's say that m is 1. Okay, So you, well, m is 1 is uninteresting. Assume m is 2. Okay, so the weights can be 1 or 2. Okay, and now you choose n very large. What do you do to find an optimum? You first take your weight 1 on that, done your weights of 2, then your difference you get is maximally 2. Now you have millions of weights which are 1, and you can balance with that. Okay, in the end you're left with either fits or not, and you get either 0 or 1. So the case where m equals 1 and n is fixed seems to, so if n is large and m is, so do it the other way around, fix n and send m towards this 1, the probability then can do it is very high. Let's do the other extreme. Okay, assume we have 2 weights and many digits. Okay, so then you have 2 weights between 1 and 2 to the m. They will typically be of order 2 to the m half, but not really, right? There are some fluctuations. And the fluctuations, if m is larger, will be huge. And the 2 weights will not, the chance that they sort of match is essentially 0. So we expect something like that for. So then the question comes, okay, but how, what if I send n to infinity? How do I send m to infinity? And things like that. So this is then the question of the threshold. So now let me take all of this away from you. And let's go a little bit into what is known. So what have done people before? Okay. So rigorous work has essentially all dealt with the case that you have continuous weights. So this means m is a number of digits, so m is essentially infinity. And if you look into these and you work out their methods, and you work a lot if m is much, much bigger than n, I mean, if m is n squared or something like that, their results probably generalize. So Karmarkar in 82 came up with a linear time algorithm for suboptimal solutions, which is still the best algorithm anybody knows for this problem. But it's suboptimal. And Karmarkar, Karp, Lücker, and Olitzko in 86, in sort of a complicated paper, came up that the typical minimal discrepancy is of order square root of n times 2 to the minus n. And in their case, there's just a scale 1 because their weights were just from some continuous weights. If you would put this m in, you would have to multiply this thing by 2 to the m. Okay, so, I mean, naively, if you take sort of a few weights of size 2 to the m, you have n half on one side and half on the other, maybe the difference is n times 2 to the m. Or maybe you're lucky and it's just 2 to the m. Well, it's much smaller, okay? It's 2 to the minus n times square root times n times what you naively thought. And Lücker then did also the expected one. So that's pretty much where things were standing rigorously. What's known non-rigorously? Well, non-rigorously, Fu and Co. sort of mapped this thing to a random spin system. Then they used physics methods to look at it. And they concluded there's no phase transition. Now, these are physics methods. They're non-rigorous. Turns out they're not only non-rigorous, they're actually wrong. Okay. So then Gant and Walch came along. Now we have AI. People are maybe a little bit more sophisticated, or maybe not, depending on your taste. So they came up, they predicted a phase transition, they did some simulation, they came up, m of n equals 0.96 plus minus 0.001 or something like that. Well, they're better, but they're actually still wrong. Now comes a modern physicist, Stefan Mertens. He again mapped this thing into a spin system, but he used more modern physics methods from spin system. She concluded that the model should have a phase transition at kappa equals 1. So they probably didn't do their numerics right. But we will actually later see why maybe they got this number wrong. And then Mertens did something very sort of astonishing at the first time if you look at it. He came up with some approximations called the random energy approximation. I will tell you in a moment what it is. And he actually predicted the precise distribution of this dn. Okay, so the thing for which here we have sort of some theta of and the expected size against some theta of, he said, in the limit, I can tell you exactly what the distribution is. With a method which sounds totally bogus, And I will come to that. Okay. So what is this totally bogus method? He did the following. Okay. He said, let's look at these weights. They're 2 to the n minus 1 unordered partitions. And so there are 2 to the n minus 1 dependent random variables for the corresponding discrepancies. Quite dependent, because there are only n numbers. But still, so you have 2 to the n numbers. And he said, let's just assume these numbers would be independent. Okay? Now, sounds pretty drastic step, but he said, look, I'll just assume it. That's what he calls the random energy model. Now, once you have that, if you have a lot of numbers which are independent, there's large order statistics, there are a lot of methods, you can do everything. I mean, once you're here, you can go on rigorously, and you get something, okay, except that this step is not quite rigorous. And so he conjectured a distribution for this minimum discrepancy. His results were consistent with Karp, Lüscher, and whatever. What is Karp, Kammerer, Lücker, and Oblitzko. And also with Lücker. In fact, they're much stronger. But, I mean, any chance they're right. Any chance they're even approximately. Maybe wrong by a factor 2 or whatever. We don't know, right? So,
why would it get the square root n? I mean, if it's independent numbers, then the minimum would be 2 to the minus n, right?
Not quite, because you have these weights which go from 1 up to 2 to the m, and you scale m with n, and there's sort of some...
Well, I'm thinking about weights between 0 and
1. No. The square root n of fluctuations around somewhere.
The difference.
Right. There's some square root of n standard fluctuations around which sort of you naively don't immediately see. Okay? So now what did we do? Okay. I will first tell you what we found out, okay? So first thing we found, there's a sharp threshold. Okay? So Stefan Martin, right, there really is a sharp threshold at kappa equals 1. And the probability there exists a perfect partition is 1 or 0s depending on the two sides. And now you say, okay, so now what is the next power? How wide is the window? What should we do? So that will be our next theorem. So we have some scaling, which is, forget about that for the moment, so you have 1 minus lambda n over n, so that's a pretty narrow window. I mean, it's pretty much as narrow as it could get. But observe there's actually a shift which is larger than the size of the window. So that's actually similar to the thing I was talking this morning about, where the width of the window is very narrow and the shift is bigger. Here the shift is not as big, but still the shift is bigger. And so this is probably by this numerical peak, right? Because there, when they see this width of the window, scale that correctly, but the log was varying too slowly for them to see, and that's why they got, instead of 1, y minus a little bit. And so... what is the number of perfect partitions? Well, it goes to 1 if lambda n goes to minus infinity. It goes to 0 if it goes to plus infinity. And actually goes to an explicit calculable constant if lambda n goes to a constant. Okay, so now that we know that here there exist perfect partitions, you may wonder, how many? And here there are no perfect partitions, but there are always optimal partitions, right? So is the optimum unique, or do you just get, maybe you have many, many, which are just a little bit above what you thought is the best you can do?
And these are the theorems that you proved in the direction of the random energy?
I'm not yet done. These are the first few theorems.
But there are other theorems.
It comes.
Sorry, yeah, no, I didn't mean to say
yes. Right, so this is first, the first theorem establishes the threshold. And this does the window. So now... Well, so in the random graph, you would have here 1 minus lambda n over n to the 1/3. So you see this is much narrower. Actually, for many random models, there are lower bounds that you can't do better than 1 over square root of n. But they don't apply here. So this is a very sharp window. Actually, typically, only first order phase transition for the physicist among you have a width which is 1 over volume. Normally, you get always a trivial exponent in 1 over n if it's a second order. So what's the next theorem? I need a little bit of notation, not much. Okay. So, Zn tilde is just the number of optimal partitions. So, if they are perfect one, it's the number of perfect partitions, otherwise the number of optimal partitions. And we have these two events because it turns out there's some slight difference. Okay, so what do we get? We get that if lambda n goes to minus infinity, there are actually exponentially many perfect partitions exponential in lambda n. Okay, if you choose lambda n really outside the window, so up there, that means that lambda n is proportional to n, so then it's exponential in n, but inside the window, or sort of near the window, it's just exponential in this lambda. We know exactly the factor in front, and turns out that on the even and the odd, there's a factor of 2, because sort of for the perfect one, if a perfect one is even, it must be 0. If the perfect one is odd, it could be plus or minus 1. This is a factor 2. So both in probability and expectation. Inside the window, this guy is bounded in probability. And above the window, the optimum partition is with high probability unique. Okay. Now, okay, so this is, I will leave this out. Well, maybe I won't. So for those of you who are interested in entropy, okay, the entropy is defined as the logarithm of the number divided by the volume, by the number of vertices or whatever. And if you just take this formula and calculate it, you find that this is a curve like this, with the derivative having a jump here, typical for a first order phase transition. Okay, but okay. So, now we get towards this random energy stuff, okay? So first, what's about... So now we want to look at the distribution of these discrepancies. And let's first look below the window, okay? We know there's a perfect partition with high probability. So we know actually that dn is 0 if this is even, and it's 1 if it's odd. So the distribution is very clear. It's just a delta function. And it's a discrete variable. There's not much space for fluctuations. I mean, it's the next guys are exponential. There's not much to be said here, okay? But what inside the window where we only have that it's bounded in probability or above where we know it sort of must go to, it sort of is definitely never zero. There's no perfect partition and stuff. So what do we know there? So what we know there, it turns out we can actually still calculate this stuff. Okay? So the exponentially distributed funny thing, normally would just think it's some r to the l or so. Difference again comes even and odd. One of them is due to odd partitions. And this is some implicit factor. And above, we also know what it converges to. So the discrepancy is of order 2 to the lambda n. Okay, so the higher lambda is, the higher the typical discrepancy is. This is actually sort of the same scale with Lücker and Odlitzko and Karp-Kammacker had. And we actually know what the distribution is. It's again redistributed. So now you may say, how does it compare to this random energy calculations? How good were they? Well, it turned out, okay, so they agree. Okay, so at least for these quantities we have here, for this guy, it exactly gives the same answer as the random energy approximation. Now, before we said this sounds really bogus, it's probably all junk. So now we sort of start to wonder, maybe it's not so junk. Maybe in some sense it's correct. Maybe in some sense these 2 to the n random variables are effectively independent. They can't be really independent because they're just depend. I mean, you give me n numbers which come out of n numbers, you solve the linear system and you have the xn. So, I mean, only n minus 1 of them can be really independent. But maybe they're effectively independent if you look at discrepancies or some things like that. And so that is what turns out to be true. We can actually calculate these guys. Okay. So now let's look at these guys, which is the number of unordered partitions with discrepancy at most this guy. Okay. So what we claim is that this process converges to a Poisson process. What does that mean? Well, in particular, it means that the increments of this guy are independent. So that means you choose any non-overlapping interval. So you look at discrepancies between 1 half times 2 to the lambda n and 1 times 2 to the times this factor, and then between 3 and 3.5. And it turns out the two of them are independent. That's what the statement says, okay? So in the sense of convergence of processes, which means sort of for the finite moments, we actually have proven, in quotation marks, that this random energy approximation actually is correct. Okay? And it turns out you can, after rescaling, do the same for continuously distributed random variables, and you get out, again, the distribution. There's just some scaling factors here, and if you then calculate the expectation or the setters, you will find the results of Odlitzko and these guys. So, let me just mention a few ingredients of the proof, okay? So the first step is sort of, you essentially have to have the idea, then it's not that difficult. And these ideas actually we sort of borrowed from Stefan Mertens, the physicist. Not in this form I will talk about in a moment. So the first thing is you just coat a partition by coloring one side red and green, and then call the green ones minus 1 and the red ones plus 1. Okay, that doesn't look that deep. But now you have spins, it's minus, and you start to get all the intuition from magnetic systems. You start to look at partition functions. And what Mertens did, he actually looked at partition functions, some temperature beta, and sent it to zero to get the optimization. And when he does that, there are some limits. So it is actually better to work directly with this number of partitions with this discrepancy. So, and actually now it takes a signed discrepancy. You just write down what it is. There are 2 to the n possible ones. And now you want to put an indicator function that the chosen one has exactly this discrepancy. And this is just the indicator function. And then you get these guys from, well, the indicator function is L phi minus sum over xi phi, and then you sum, and I'm not going into that. You can derive this formula with not too much work. Okay, so now the work starts. Okay. Below the window, astonishingly, if you work hard enough, the second moment method works. Okay. Now, so this may sound really trivial. On the other hand, when Stefan sent his paper to Odlitzko, he sort of said this can never be made rigorous. And it turns out that when I say second moment method works, this seems sort of trivial. Turns out to calculate these moments, to calculate the asymptotics as n goes to infinity, is quite a bit of work. In particular, these integrals, they depend on these random guys, right? And there's a parameter m in it. Now you take these expectations, and then you get the parameter n going to infinity, but the parameter m going to infinity, and when you do your standard Laplacian method for settled points, one of them works for you and the other works against you. And you have to be very careful. And if you don't pay attention, immediately this term becomes sort of much bigger than this one. But anyhow, so you can do that. So now above the window, what do we want to do? Okay. So above the window, we want to show that this guy, just the sum of the partitions up to a certain point, converge to independently exponentially distributed random variables. That means it's a Poisson process. Okay. So how can you do that? Well, the Stein's method doesn't work. Okay. So you go more back to the basis. You see multidimensional factorial moments. Okay. I mean, one exponential distribution gives you factorial moments. A process gives you multidimensional factorial moments. And now you have to study them. And you end up doing sort of some pretty complicated probabilities here. I think if we hadn't had Boris Pittel as a collaborator, we would have never gotten through this part. Okay, you end up proving multidimensional locate Limerence theorems for non-identically distributed vector summons. And I mean, if locate Limerence theorems don't scare you, maybe you start reading this stuff. If they scare you, don't go on. So this one we were sort of comfortable with, but then it gets complicated. Okay, but with the help of I leave out the joke. So with the help of Boris, we managed to do that. So I have 15 minutes. So let me just briefly summarize what we have done here. Okay. So this unconstrained random partition has a sharp threshold. We know the scaling window. The shift is much larger than the width. Below the window, there are exponentially many perfect partitions. Above, the optimum partition is unique, which means that the derivative of the entropy jumps. And we calculate the exact limit in distribution and found, to our surprise, that this very strange random energy approximation is actually asymptotically exact. So, now I come to the constraint problem. Actually, much less is known. Okay, so problem is as before. So you have these weights, but now you fix what the imbalances, okay? So I fix how many are on the right, how many on the left. So I fix this difference of the two sides. So I fix that there are k here, n minus k here. Then the difference is just s minus n. 2k minus n. So we will fix the imbalance s to be a particular value. Okay? So I give you 50 weights. Tell you, you can put 40 on this side, 10 on that side. Not what are you going to do? Okay. Well, if I give you really 50 and 40, you might say, this is sort of doesn't look good. Why would you say it doesn't look good? Well, you say, look, if I take 40 weights here and 10 here, say all sort of, if you take typical weights of the same order, this will be much, much bigger than this one. However, am I going to make them equal? Well, I think, what would you say, what's your best bet? Your best bet is put as many small weights as you can on one side. Okay, so if you have here a lot, okay, these lot weights have a tendency to go down. So let's put all the lightest weight on this side, this side. If this side still goes down, there's nothing you can do because you want to make it lighter, but if you change anything, you put a heavier weight over there. Okay, so in other words, I mean, this is sort of maybe not worth being called a lemma. Order them according to their size, put the lower ones on one side, the heavier one on the other side. If this is bigger or equal than zero, it's actually the best you can do. You have found the optimum partition. Very nice. It's because this you can actually do in n log n. You actually don't really have to sort. You can actually do it in n. So you have a linear time algorithm. It's sort of as fast as Karp-Kammacher, except that it's exact. So the question is, when does this happen, right? So now, before I tell you that, I need, unfortunately, a little bit of definitions, okay? So we want, in general, to determine what's the optimal discrepancy and the number of perfect partitions, let's say, as a function of kappa, which is this ratio of m over n, and the imbalance. Or if you want the percentage on the right and percentage on the left, they're just easily related to each other. Okay? Now, answers to these questions, this probability model, will depend on a few functions, on one function actually I have to introduce. Okay? So there's this, don't even worry what it is, some explicit function of your parameter b and two real variables, xi and eta. And you will take the infimum over these two variables. So that's something you can do with computer. It's just a one-dimensional problem. Okay? So, and you can prove a lot of things about this function. So let's see as essentially this function, there's some factor log 2. Okay? So now, the first answer I have will actually concern that. For that, I don't even need. So let me just put it here. Okay. So if this S over N is larger than some critical value, which turned out for the uniform distribution to be square root 2 minus 1, then with high probability the sorted partition is optimal. And actually, it gets pretty big. It gets as big as you would think. 2 to the M is the scale on which your weights are. And N, I mean, as soon as this sort of, I mean, this will typically not be zero, but really of order. So that's where you get, okay? It gets as big as you could, okay? On the other hand, back to here.
This
part is obvious. So it's actually, I mean, if you want to do that, just say, okay, you determine some... Can you get the square root of 2 in your head that fast?
Yes.
Right, exactly. So the only thing you have to do some concentration because you just replace the imperial measure by the integral, which... Right. So this is trivial. Okay. Now, on the other hand, now, if b is smaller than this value, it turns out that this function has a unique minimizer, and this guy is actually zero, is positive. Okay? And I'm not sure whether I will be able to tell you. This has a lot of meaning, which I will tell you in a moment. For the moment, just this means this function here is well-defined and positive. We can do something with it. So, for example, we can state this theorem. Okay. So we have that if b is smaller than this critical value, above which you have sorted partitions, and if kappa is larger than this function I've defined there, then with high probability there are no perfect partitions, and the optimum you can get is 2 to the m times e to the minus theta of n. Okay, so let me do a picture. So we have above here the sorted partitions, and if we are bigger than this kappa c, which I defined, then there are no perfect partitions. And now the optimum is much better. Okay, it goes from being linear to n to be exponentially small in n. So that's very nice. Okay? Yeah. N. Did I? M. This is m. This should be n. So this is m and this is n. This is m and this is n. Okay, so there's this prefactor which has to be there for scaling reasons, and then it goes linear in n versus exponentially small in n. Okay? Now, where's my other theorem? I actually want this theorem back. These definitions I want back. No, maybe I want this back, sorry. How much time have I left? 5 minutes. Good. So there is this minimizer. Okay. Now I use this minimizer to define a second quantity, some kappa minus. Don't worry how it's really defined. And now we have the following theorem that if B lies below this threshold and kappa is smaller than kappa minus, then with high probability there are exponentially many perfect partitions. Okay, you can actually show that kappa minus lies strictly below here. So that's what you get. Okay? So this looks sort of nice, right? We now have three faces. Here we have perfect partition. Optimum is 0 or 1. Here we have non-perfect partitions. Optimum is exponentially small. Here we have the sorted region. Unfortunately, we have this little area which we can't really deal with. And I just want to make a remark why we believe it shouldn't be there, even though we, unfortunately, at this point, really can't prove it. If you look in this region, okay, we can calculate the number of perfect partitions is. This function L hat actually turns up here, okay, and has to do something with an integral representation. You have to do some shift to a complex saddle point. You have to do some optimization of your parameters. That's why you get an infimum there. And this function turns out in front, and you have to deal with some random integral, and you have to be able to deal with it. And we can deal with it in this region. And what we get is this formula. Okay? And remember, this was involved in the definition of kappa c. So you see this factor, if I just would forget that the errors, this stays exponentially large up to this point here. Up to here. Okay? Unfortunately, when we really do the analysis, there's this random integral that corresponds to some local limit theorem which is described, which has some additional randomness in it, and we just don't know how to deal with it for the moment. So that's really not nice. We don't know there's a sharp threshold, okay? So in this sense, I mean, we believe there is one, we believe at this point, but we actually can't prove it. And the other way around, from above, so I have a similar line like that, where we know that above, actually, the optimum is unique. Again, we can't really prove it up to here. The distance between here and here is exactly the same. So this is what we can't say. I don't have time for the structure of the proof. I just mumbled something about this random integral, so you have to ask me privately. Okay, so here is still pretty much open, right? Is there a sharp threshold? What's the distribution above? Okay. There's sort of these partitions around, so it's less believable that all this discrepancy will be independent as you go higher and higher up. So we would not really expect the random energy to be correct, and Stefan did some numerical simulations which indicate they're not correct. So what is that? What's the scaling window? Okay, we believe that it actually is of similar form as before, except maybe a square root of n gets replaced by an n. But again, we have no way to prove that for the moment.
Any questions, comments?
Can you calculate any of these general gadgets to get just the sharpness of the threshold?
They usually use monotonicity. It usually you need monotone properties, right? I would actually be very interested. So if you could come up with...
It seems to be a device which works with a rather limited amount of information.
Right, it would be very nice, actually. And
not the sharp.
So I started to ask people questions, so you should be one of those that asked this question. So it would be interesting to apply that here. Actually, we asked the course.
He's in Microsoft now.
He's visiting us right now.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you are the guy who proved the more general theorem. Just push it a little and maybe it covers this.
We can discuss. Is there any interest in looking at larger than two partitions?
Yes, there is. So that was one of the... In the other part where we have sort of done everything, if you don't fix the imbalance, then there are sort of a lot of extensions you might want to ask, right? Three-way partitions. You may also ask into vector-valued numbers. Once you do that, you get very near to these lattice problems, which, again, people have not quite established that they're distant p-complete, but they are one of these problems where people have managed to turn hardness assumptions for the worst case into hardness result for average case. And so these are sort of extensions you can think of. They're actually, I mean, I think they might be doable. We have not really looked deep into them. And the three-way partitions are clearly interesting for applications and stuff.
So that would, I suppose, correspond to a higher spin model.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if there are no more questions, then thank you again.